Elizabeth Elliot says, "I believe there is such a thing as self-esteem and self-image, but I do not think that it is something that you and I ought to be paying much attention to. Life is too short for that, as far as I'm concerned." She says, "I would much rather use the energy and the time that I have and direct it towards knowing God, worshiping God, loving God, finding out who He is, and daily praying that He will make me much more like Himself." Welcome to Gateway to Joy, a ministry of author and teacher Elizabeth Elliot.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says, and underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend Elizabeth Elliot, talking with you this time about something called a weight of glory. The first time I was widowed, I received bags of mail from people trying to comfort me, telling me they were praying for me, telling me how shocked they had been to hear my husband's death. He was 28 years old. I was 29. But of all the letters that came, I think the one that stands out in my mind is the one that quotes two verses from 2 Corinthians. And those are the verses that I have most often given to other widows when I've had opportunity to try to comfort them. This is what Paul says to the Corinthian church. "Our troubles are slight and short-lived, and their outcome an eternal glory which outweighs them far. Meanwhile, our eyes are fixed not on the things that are seen, but on the things that are unseen. For what is seen passes away. What is unseen is eternal." And I ponder those words over and over again. Our troubles are slight and short-lived. Would you say that to a widow? Your troubles are slight? Well, that's probably not the first thing that you would think of saying, and if you did think of it, you'd probably keep your mouth shut. Because to one who has just been bereaved, their troubles seem enormous, life-changing. And on that scale of traumas or stress factors, I think losing a loved one is at the very top. So our troubles do not seem slight and short-lived at the time, but remember who's writing this. It's not a man who knew nothing about suffering. The Apostle Paul had been through a lot. Shipwrecks, starving, imprisonments, public floggings. He had a long list of trials and tribulations that really makes mine look like practically nothing. And it was Paul who was able to say, "Our troubles are slight and short-lived." But that's not very much comfort. It's the next part that's comfort. Their outcome. So they have an outcome? You mean there's a point to this? There's a purpose? You mean it's not for nothing? I'm not at the mercy of chance? What does he say? Their outcome is an eternal glory. Or, as another translation puts it, a weight of glory. In other words, Paul is using the metaphor of a scales, an old-fashioned scales, in which you have two pans balanced on a fulcrum. And you put weights on one side and whatever it is you're trying to weigh on the other side. So here we are to put the weight of glory, which he doesn't define, something mysterious, something heavenly, something invisible, you put that on one side, and on the other pan, just load all your troubles. Are you bereaved? Are you sick? Have you lost a job? Have you lost your health? Have you lost your self-respect? Have you lost your husband by divorce? What is it that is the weight of trouble that bears you down today? Put it in the other pan and look what happens. He says their outcome will be a weight of glory that outweighs them far. In other words, all the hurts we've ever suffered, all the losses, all the bereavement, all the trials, all the horrible things that have happened to us, they will look like nothing when we get that weight of glory on the other side. It's going to make that pan with all our troubles in it just fly up as if it had nothing in it but feathers. That's the picture he's giving us. There is going to be an eternal weight of glory. And it says that these troubles are actually working for us an eternal weight of glory. I was amazed at those words. It was really a shock to me to realize that this fact of bereavement, that my actual sorrow was in a mysterious and incomprehensible way, working, operating, doing something, which was going to prepare for me, not me for, but for me, a weight of glory, something that I'm going to understand when I get to heaven. And then in verse 18, he goes on and says, "Meanwhile, our eyes are fixed, not on the things that are seen, but on the things that are unseen. For what is seen passes away. What is unseen is eternal." And one of the hardest things for me about widowhood was the fact that there were a whole lot of seen things around there that were going to pass away, but they hadn't passed away as fast as my husband Jim. What an irony that the house that he had built was still there, but he was gone. Every now and then I would come across something still left in the house which I thought I had gotten rid of, because I did set to work very quickly to sort his things, give away his clothes, and get rid of everything that I was sure I wasn't going to need but somebody else might need. But I hadn't really done a 100% job. One day I found a pair of shoes tucked way back in the corner of a closet. I pulled them out and stood there staring at them. There was the shape of his feet, those feet that I had known so well, as I knew every inch of that body that was now in a grave on the Kururai River. And it was as if a dagger stabs my heart each time I see something like that. I would open a book and find a notation of his in a margin with his handwriting, and I would think his hand was on that page. Well, I don't want to get maudlin, but I hope that I'm ringing a few bells out there. Some of you know what I mean. There are all those little reminders, the things that he had made, the things that he had used, his Bible, his pen, his notebooks, his diaries, his clothes, reminders of what I have lost. Paul says, "Fix your eyes not on the things that are seen, but on the things that are unseen." Why? Because the things that are seen are not going to last very long. The things that are unseen are going to last forever. Maybe the things which are seen right now, for some of you, are your kitchen, your laundry room, your child. Maybe your child is screaming right now. Maybe he's just spilled the milk or the applesauce or rubbed the applesauce in his hair or on your best dress. Those are things seen, aren't they? And those can be trials, believe me, I know. Our troubles are slight and short-lived, and their outcome an eternal glory. What? Outcome of something like this? This disaster in the kitchen, this overflowing washing machine, this flat tire? What are you talking about, I can hear you saying. Their outcome can be an eternal glory if you look at them in light of the eternal, of the invisible. Even these little things, these troubles which most of us would admit are slight, the slight things as well as the things which look big to us, their outcome can be an eternal glory if we fix our eyes on the things which are unseen. When you look at that little child, what do you see? Well, if he's peacefully asleep with his golden curls on the pillow or his little black kinky curls on the pillow, he looks like a little angel, doesn't he? So sweet. You just want to eat him. And that same little golden-haired or kinky-haired child, can't he be a little devil the next day? The things which are seen. Do you remember that you are raising that child for God, not just for you? God has given you a job for eternity in raising that child. And there will be, if you offer up to him all the sufferings that that child causes, all the little troubles, all the anger, all the impatience, if you will offer it up to God, there will be a weight of glory. Don't ever forget that that little child has a halo. He was sent to you by God, and Jesus says, if you receive one of these little ones in my name, you receive me. And so I went back to my work in the jungle, to taking care of my baby and teaching my Indians, to cleaning the house and cleaning the lawn and the pineapple patch, to delivering babies and giving shots of penicillin. And I did the next thing, asking God to help me to do it for him. My daughter was fatherless. I had to be a single parent. I've had people say to me, how could you be both mother and father to your daughter? My answer was, I couldn't. God had taken her father. I had to be her mother. Do the next thing. And do it remembering that if that thing is offered to God, it can be transformed into something eternal. It will contribute to that weight of glory, which is going to far outweigh the worst troubles that you have ever experienced here in this life. And one of the things which God seemed to be saying to me was, write a biography. I suddenly realized that I had a treasure trove in Jim's diaries. And I had said to Jim a few months before he died, you know, this is good stuff. One of these days I might write your biography. And so there was a seed planted in my mind, maybe I would do that. And when he died, I thought, could that be the next thing with all I've got to do? Well, Lord, you're going to have to help me, just as he had to help me with all the other things that I had to do on that station. But I offered them to him. I said, Lord, it's your work. I'm your servant. It's your glory that I'm aiming for. Help me.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliott, author of over 20 books, including Discipline, The Glad Surrender, and No Graven Image. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.